Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name is Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, it's a real pleasure to welcome back Rick Watson to our podcast. Rick serves as founder and CEO of New York-based RMW Commerce Consulting. Rick founded his firm after spending more than 20 years as a technology entrepreneur and operator exclusively in the e-commerce sector with companies like Channel Advisor, BarnesandNoble.com, Merchantry, and Pitney & Bowes. Rick's work today is centered on supporting investors and management teams, incubating and growing direct-to-consumer businesses. Most recently, in partnership with WHP Global, Rick served as a critical resource in architecting the WHP Plus platform, a new turnkey direct-to-consumer digital e-commerce platform that powers AnnKlein.com and also JosephAbboud.com. Hey, Rick, welcome back to our podcast.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Great to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you. And the timing is good, obviously, too, Rick, given everything that's going on. Why don't we sort of start with a bit of a two-parter? Obviously, there's a supply chain crisis amidst. It's been going on for quite some time now. We've been seeing it in many different ways. So from your perspective, Rick, I guess is the part one. How long, in your opinion, do you think things could remain in the current state? That is, the state of being snarled, clusters, et cetera. And then as a part two, heading into 2022, if you were to offer up a cautious outlook of sorts, how would you classify that?
Yeah, I think it's so complicated questions. No one has a crystal ball, but I see kind of three major challenges, and I think the biggest problem we have here is if this were a normal time, you'd be able to give a little bit more straightforward answers. Like if the answers were all within the call it the four walls of America, the continental US.
But sure.
We're not dealing with that at all. We're dealing with, extremely complex global supply chains, each of which company has different policies and standards, different labor and capacity constraints, different COVID policies. Some have zero COVID, et cetera. And so I think So let's look at three. I'm not even going to touch COVID. Who knows what's going to happen there?
Yeah,
When does this become
That's
normal?
Fine.
But I think, to me, the biggest thing is, on the COVID side of it, is when do countries relax their zero COVID policies? Because that seems to be the biggest factor hurting the global supply chain, i.e. manufacturing, and the ports and things like that. And when you have one case and things shut down for a month, and there are significant countries that have had those policies. So I think that's something that I would, without predicting a time on it, that's something I would look for. Like, when does COVID go from something that's viewed more as an epidemic to something that's more, a little bit more endemic? We're going to have to deal with this for a while. So that's something I would look for closely. And then I think the other two constraints that we see are really kind of labor and capacity. Let's leave the hardest one for the end, which I think is labor, and start with capacity. I think capacity meaning essentially throughput of the ports due to demand, increased consumer demand, but also capacity of third-party fulfillment facilities, warehouses in the U.S. and elsewhere. I think capacity is something that we could look to see ease, kind of toward the first 3 or 4 months of next year. Amazon pulled literally all of their 2022 network builds into 2021, which didn't do any favors for their Q3 earnings. But my suspicion is they're probably happy to have that constraint behind them.
Yes.
I think the... by far the trickiest thing that we're talking about is labor, because we're talking about something that every it's different in different generations. If you look at warehouse facilities, you're looking at truckers, which a lot of it is, an aging demographic, some of which it was hard to find we knew that population was going to, was not growing prior to the pandemic.
Right.
The pandemic accelerated early retirements, sometimes 3 and 5 years, maybe before some of these workers expected to retire, because is it simply not worth it to be a frontline worker, you know, for the pay and the foolishness you have to put up with just for dealing with the general public? So that added sort of a constraint on top of a constraint. And so to me, that's the trickiest part. And it's not just truckers. I think it goes, you know, anyone involved in the supply chain from the time it hits the docks to the time it, you know, let's say put away in a facility, you know, is probably, you know, the first part of that constraint. And man, Jeff,
yeah.
I haven't seen anyone predicting that that would ease before the middle of next year. And I think, yeah, if demand continues like it is, it's not going to ease, is my fear. And so I think we may just be almost waiting for demand to let up a little bit.
Yeah, I think we all are, right? So speaking of demand and companies that are always focused on meeting the demand, I mean, obviously we have the major parcel duopoly, tried and true, that being FedEx and UPS, and Amazon obviously continues to make major inroads on the logistics front. And they all recently posted earnings or going back over the last few weeks. For to look back at those earnings for sort of takeaways or, you know, what they mean, how shippers should be interpreting sort of their messaging within the earnings. I know there's a lot of things there when we think about services, rates, pricing, et cetera. How do you sort of assess what we learned over those recent earnings calls?
Wow, yeah. So kind of like the triumvirate here, Amazon, yeah, FedEx, and UPS. Let's start with UPS. I think the interesting thing about, so let's kind of start at the top level. Amazon is driving most of the, you know, over 50% of the e-commerce growth in the United States still. And, yeah, and so I think they're at the biggest pressure points, which means that FedEx and UPS is really trying to decide how am I going to be relevant in this Amazon-focused world. FedEx has really decided to opt out, you know, essentially. It's like, look, we're going to find other customers. UPS has been very strategic about the types of parcels that it's targeting. So small parcel and SMB is essentially their focus, to the, not necessarily the detriment of everything else, but they've made clear prioritization choices. And so what I saw coming out of the UPS earnings were actually benefits of their disciplined execution. You saw, yeah, parcel volume rise. You saw profit per piece rise. You saw utilization of their network, you know, including like trucks and facilities, rise all at the same time. That to me smells like a well-run company that has, yes, made very deliberate choices about what businesses they want to compete in.
Yeah, no question about it. So moving on, what about from the FedEx and Amazon perspectives?
Yeah, look, the funny thing is parts of Amazon and FedEx calls sound remarkably similar, but for, yeah, but for different reasons. FedEx, I would say, is still catching up to direct consumer and small parcel and excellence there. And they just do not have their act together on mostly on the labor front, which is obviously affecting everyone. But
yeah, that was a big part of their earnings call, if I remember, exactly, correctly.
Yeah, exactly. So hiring costs have gone up, wages have gone up, earnings have gone up. And by the way, even with all of that, they still can't hire the number to staff facilities, which has caused chaos. You know, the term is chaos costs in the network. If a, yes, parcel is going from Missouri to Washington State, if you have to route it in a non-optimal direction for no other reason than labor, then your costs are going to go up. And so they were hit with a lot of that in Q3. And I think that will increase in Q4. And the thing that strained credibility to me on the FedEx earnings call was that they did not predict that those chaos costs would increase in Q4, which I just sat there shaking my head and just made me wonder if, like, has FedEx lost the narrative? Like, what made them a great company to begin with? You know, and what Fred Smith built in a sort of a great technology and logistics organization over the years, is that unraveling in some sense?
Okay. Understood. And, you know, Amazon, we look at their numbers, we look at their freight, their logistics spend. It's a figure that just continues to rise and rise, with really no financial fear, if you will. I mean, they're willing to spend the money to build out their network and do what they want. I was just reading in the New York Times this morning about their order of 100,000 delivery trucks from Rivian, right, as an example. I mean, there's obviously much more than that with what they're doing on the air freight side and stuff. But, you know, not to tell the entire logistics story of Amazon, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about their new local selling initiative too, with in terms of them sort of entering omnichannel in terms of local pickup and same day last mile by sellers. We can get into that too, Rick, but I just wanted to kind of leave the door open for you for Amazon.
Yeah, I think Amazon definitely had some similar constraints to FedEx with labor. I think I would caveat that in that a lot of it is, I won't say self-imposed, but Amazon has two big things going for it that FedEx doesn't. Number one is that it's still growing pretty fast, even if some of the growth has decelerated on a year-over-year basis, because we're just coming off one of the greatest years ever in e-commerce. Yeah. So people were shocked that Amazon only had 15% top-line growth. But still, as mostly an e-com-only company, that's still pretty remarkable. Second is the fact that Amazon seemed a little bit mortal in that it faced a lot of these chaos costs because it couldn't staff its own facilities. To me, I take that a little bit with a grain of salt, because Amazon in the last 18 months has doubled its logistics capacity, which I can't even put a, you know, I can't even wrap my brain around a little bit, given what the scale Amazon was at before. And they doubled that. I talked about this on my podcast, and I just think that they were determined at any cost to solve capacity. It's like, we're just going to have one constraint, only labor. Capacity, we're going to solve this year, come hell or high water.
Yeah. Oh, boy. And what about that local selling initiative, though, Rick? It seems pretty neat, and certainly I think would send a message to the big two.
Yeah, I think Amazon has sort of two things that I think they need to think about. One is, before, you know, buy online, pick up in store, and particularly in the last 2 years, the rise of curbside has been remarkable. If you look at a company like Target and Walmart, curbside is by far their fastest growing format, almost growing like over 50% year over year. And so if you're Amazon, if you're looking at data on consumer trends and convenience, and in particularly if an area where supply chain certainty is not a given, even for somebody like Amazon, the consumer on their way home from work being able to know that either I'm going to pick it up or I'm not going to pick it up. But, you know, I know if I show up, it says it's there. I have it and I have it on the way home. I don't have to trust that it's going to be here or not if I go browse a website. And so to me, that's what Amazon is looking at when it's looking at this local selling initiative. And, you know, if I'm in Amazon, figure you have like 2 million plus sellers. Obviously, there's a lot of Chinese sellers, so maybe you have to take, you know, at least half of those out of the equation or something like that.
Yeah.
Particularly in the top seller quadrant. But outside, you have a lot of U.S. businesses with locations all over the U.S. that aren't participating in this sort of same day delivery or curbside delivery on one end. So there's a format the consumers have grown to prefer, number one. And second is fulfillment by Amazon cannot accept enough demand. Almost every Amazon seller you speak to these days says they're very much constrained by fulfilled by Amazon capacity.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty finite at this point, maybe.
So Amazon is kind of, as a seller, you're like, what do you want me to do? Like, how do I serve these consumers? You know, I can't get the Prime badge because I can't ship it in the FBA. And by the way, consumers are upset because they can't get it fast. Like, you need to give me a win here.
Yeah, well put. Yeah, absolutely. Well, shifting gears for a moment here, Rick, you know, obviously the last mile market continues to go strong. And it was just recently highlighted. There have been a couple big deals of late going back the last few weeks, if you will. UPS took over or acquired Roadie out of Atlanta. And obviously the more recent LSO, Lone Star Overnight, acquiring OnTrack, I believe for something like $1.3 billion. Just a huge deal. And why don't we break up the last mile market into two sort of tracks, one being these types of acquisitions, what it means for the market, and then two, just how the market is doing. I mean, especially this time of year, right? With everyone really rushing to get their holiday shopping done between now and say Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of last mile, UPS and Roadie, I thought it was an interesting acquisition. And I've been trying to discern how are they going to integrate this with their network. And it seems kind of clear to me that where they viewed Roadie was similar to the way that that Walmart is viewing their kind of woke, you know, go local fulfillment program, which is not necessarily small parcels.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit bigger, bulkier items that can fit in a van or a car that you need very quickly. And so, you know, it's almost a little bit more like these one-off shipments rather than the small parcel, you know, let sub 2 pound stuff that maybe, to be honest, is like junking up the UPS network today. Maybe yeah. They're trying to siphon some of this volume. I don't know what your take on that was.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's still pretty early innings. I mean, the ink's barely dry from that contract. I think they just had their formal ceremony about that a week or two ago. But I didn't see that one coming. I'll be perfectly honest. Uh-huh. You look at last mile, Rick, you know, you have these regional players, obviously these LSOs, the OnTracks, I don't know if it's still around. There was Eastern Connection here in the Boston area for a while. I think they got acquired though, but how do you view the regionals on balance? It seems like they're all becoming a bit bigger, a bit more name brand, if you will. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was spurred on by the pandemic, but it's, you know, people, even before the pandemic, we were buying a lot of stuff online. Is it fair to say it really accelerated the role or the rise of the regional players?
I think that's right. And I think clearly the rise of e-commerce helps, number one. I think some of the failures in some of the majors and their prioritization decisions has made it such that it's very hard for one nationwide, you know, fully integrated carrier to handle every type of parcel to every destination with every time or package or material constraint that there is, whether it's okay. Cold chain or everything else. So I think the more we get into the rise of not only direct to consumer, but also business to business commerce, and that keeps growing, I think the trend of more regional specialized carriers is here to stay because they're able to optimize their networks for a particular set of, maybe they have a labor advantage in a certain market that the right. national carriers don't have. Maybe they have, you know, some route advantages or equipment advantages, you know, where their drivers know certain routes better than anyone else, versus, you know, any generic driver should go to any, like if you get into an Amazon delivery vehicle and you're one of their franchise owner, you don't know where you're going to go in a day. The software is going to tell you. Well, the regional carriers aren't necessarily doing things that way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, well, it's good. There's a lot of runway there, so we'll just have to see how things go from here on out. And just to wrap up, Rick, the kind of the the predictable question that I think you probably knew was coming is it simply has to do with peak season. How you sort of are viewing peak season. It stands to reason that this year's could be very much different than past ones, to say the least. I mean, last year's wasn't very normal either, looking back now, especially because we all were largely still indoors and not doing a whole lot except buying things online to a certain extent. What's different this year? How do you view it? I mean, obviously this year has the added quote unquote bonus, if you will, of major supply chain difficulties.
Yeah, I think peak season this year is going to be a little bit different than last year. Last year we saw huge constraints, not in supply necessarily, but in the network itself.
Yeah.
Really last mile and middle mile. I think this year, in the past 3 months, we've seen a major snapback in retail activity, which means consumers aren't shopping quite as much online as they did on a comparable basis this year than last year. Because a lot of consumers have returned to stores, which means that relieves, I think, a lot of peak pressure from last mile small parcel delivery networks, number one. Number two is, yeah, I think the carriers, even UPS and FedEx have gotten better about controlling the what they let into their networks. And so I think that everyone's kind of figured out is the way not to overload your network is at the intake.
Yeah.
And if you've intake too much from your biggest client, then just make them wait a day and smooth it out. And you see Amazon and other retailers offering like credits and points if you make orders on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday rather than Monday. Monday is by far the busiest day of the week. And so a retailer with a strained network would I think this offer came from FedEx recently, where if you use your network later in the week, it's, you get so many FedEx points or something. So I think networks are learning how to come up with incentives. I think relatively speaking, the season will shift a little bit earlier this year, and I think we've already seen that. I mean, it's not like peak. We're kind of already almost in peak, essentially.
Yeah.
Speaking in the middle of November, I still do think that Black Friday and Cyber Monday, from an online point of view, would be the biggest days of the year. But the peak will not be quite as sharp as in particularly last year when retail wasn't as much of an option.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely. There'll be some overlap, but some notable differences too. I think that's fair. All right. Well, look, Rick, this has been great. We're at the end of our allotted time for today's podcast. So on behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to offer up a big thank you for joining us again.
No, I appreciate it a lot, Jeff, and always glad to be on.
Yeah, likewise. It's great to have you. And for those of you on Twitter, please go ahead and give Rick a follow, simply at Rick Watson. And also give us at Logistics Management a follow too, please, simply at Logistics MGMT. And also please go ahead and feel free to sign up to our podcast. Look for Supply Chain 24/7 or wherever you get your podcast. So that's it for today. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time.